gentlemen, to another exciting, flippant and flamboyant episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously Fukushima-irradiated island-chained nation of New Zealand, where everybody has a part-time job as an energy saver light bulb, and my very special guest coming out live. Oh, wait, are you in the Naki? Kerry Campbell is my guest, I think.
Yes, I am.
Yeah. I've got some kind of affinity for the Naki, and just the mere fact that people refer to it as quote-unquote the Naki makes it awesome enough for me. And so let's get a wee bit of a backgrounder on you, Kerry. If you might explain to those who are unaware just a little bit about who you are and what it is you do.
Well, as you know, my name is Kerry Campbell. I'm a mother of eight. I live here in Taranaki. The journey I've been on for the last 4 years has been a journey of self-discovery. So that's what I do. I'm about rediscovering who I am and taking the steps necessary to be able to show to government that I am this person. I stand in my own truth. And I will challenge them on every step that they take. You know, 4 years ago I started following the corruption, which I had no idea about. You know, people talk about how corrupt the government is and whatnot, but you never, unless you actually go looking, you think everyone's a bit crazy and probably just needs to get a life. But The sad truth about it is that I went looking one day and I actually found that there was some truth in the corruption that we were under. It was like an invisible cage being placed over us that nobody even knew or was aware that we, although we feel we're roaming free, we're in actual fact not. We're in an invisible prison that we, myself and my team, strive every day to basically lift off the people here in New Zealand, in Australia. Our biggest goal is to be able to share it with the world so that the rest of the world can either follow in the same footsteps or take on their own journey in removing their shackles. So that's just a little bit about us. My background, I have a background in tertiary education, so I launched the first computer gym in Wellington. And I also used to work for the New Zealand Road Transport. So I was the administration manager at their head office in Wellington there. So that's just a little bit about me there, Vinnie.
Okay. Well, so being a mother of eight, you've got an affinity for responsibility.
Yes, I do actually. And, you know, prior to having children, I was a bit of a party girl. But as I started having children, I realised that I've got an obligation and a responsibility to these little children, and that's what I was going to do. I was going to do my best to provide them the best tools and just the best learning experiences, I suppose. And when I discovered the corruption that we were under and the lies that were being fed to us, I've made it my mission to put a system into place so that my children and anyone else that who feels the same as I do, they can escape that and they can know with 100% that their children are protected. But at the end of the day, if we don't do anything, then it's our children that have to walk with this. They have to carry it. And if we're not giving them the tools, then there's no way, there's absolutely no way they will ever overcome it. The system was designed so that not one person would ever uncover the lies and the corruption that we're currently under. So, and it's a very intricate, it's a well-designed system of lies to be able to convince people that the world that we live in is actually the world that we live in. But the Matrix tells it really, really well, so I'd recommend people go back and rewatch that, revisit the Matrix to get a good understanding of the invisible prison that we are living in.
Yeah, it's a great analogy, metaphor, whatever the particular word is. But
I also understand that you managed to withdraw $15 million from a bank.
Yeah,
and that's so what, real. That's no fairy tale or digital illusion.
No, what I did was I came across the One People's Public Trust back in June, and through using their technologies, I was actually able to make the deposit. So we had been made aware in December 2012 that the government had been foreclosed upon, and we all know that foreclosure means bankruptcy. So which is quite funny to say, but that's another story. So we had been made aware that they were foreclosed. So what I did was I took the liberty to write to them and inform them that I knew that they were closed. And I wrote to them on a number of occasions saying, you know, please, I have these legitimate questions that I need answering. And once again, they failed to respond. So in the end, I sent them a letter and I said, okay, look, it is my understanding that you have been foreclosed, and this is my intention. So I wrote to them and I let them know that I was going to take a closed check account. Now, back in 2010, this is when I first discovered the banks. The bank's corruption and how they were duping people, getting people to sign up with mortgages, and then in actual fact monetizing that signature, which is what gave birth to the creation of the funds. So when I discovered that, I took the necessary steps to be able to secure my straw man, and then I placed the lien on the National Bank back in 2010. Now I've had an old checkbook with the National Bank. So what I did was, come this year, I registered that closed check account on the securities website, and I registered them as negotiable instruments, and I also registered my declaration of being and my declaration of value, which was where the money was drawn from or underwritten from, and then I wrote to the government. And I said, look, this is what I intend to do. I'm going to I've registered my negotiable instruments to my closed checking account. Now, people need to remember it wasn't a public account that I used that was to a closed check account. And if you read Mary Croft's book, she explains the difference to you really, really well. So upon notifying everyone in government about what I was going to do, I decided to go out and educate local businesses around here in Taranaki, just to let them know how they would be able to increase their sales pipeline, increase their revenue pipeline through offering the alternative money system in their business. Now, how I visualised it was just a simple FPOS machine. So we're looking at putting together this FPOS system where we can go in, stick it into local businesses, and it'll just sit right next door to the old FPOS machine. And people that are registering with us with the alternative money system, we'll get access to a swipe card, and they'll be able to go down into these businesses that hold these machines, and they'll be able to make their purchases via the FPOS machine. And it's a great way for businesses to be able to increase their sales pipeline and their revenue pipeline. So what we did was we notified the banks, and I decided, okay, well, in order to do this and set up the centre that we want to make here available to the people of Taranaki, We need funds to do so. So I decided to draw down $15 million of my own value. And that's exactly what I did. So I wrote to the bank and I explained to them what I was going to do, and I explained what the negotiable instrument was all about. I also offered them a 10% discount, and obviously I would take $13.5 million, and TSB Bank would take $1.5 million. Upon offering them that, I also let them know that my negotiable instrument or my signature was not to be used or traded on the stock exchange or on any trading platforms. And then I made the deposit. So I went into the bank and I first and foremost, I asked for the contact details for the CEO, because I really would have preferred to have done it in person. But obviously the bank don't give out executive CEO details. So that was okay. So I said to them, okay, well, I'm going to have to charge you with the duty of delivering this to them, delivering this to your CEO. And that's exactly what we did. We delivered the documents to Kevin Murphy, Prior to delivering to him, we'd actually, if you remember, we'd actually notified the government prior to even making the deposit. So we notified the government to let them know what we were going to do, just so that they would be able to go down the channels or and of notification process. So we were sort of making it available to the government so that they could probably ring up the bank and say, hey, look, here's a heads up. You've got a girl that's coming to make your deposit. And then, yeah, so we went about doing the deposit. Now, that day I went in, I handed over the documents and everything in an envelope, and then I handed my the checkbook and my deposit book over to the counter, and I said to her, listen, I also need to make this deposit. And obviously when she looked at the check, she got a bit nervous because it was for $15 million. And, yeah, so she happily took it. She filled out the deposit slip. And she stamped my book, and then she took my negotiable instrument and she took it over to the computer and she started entering that money into the system. Now, what we do know for a fact is how banks create money out of thin air. And what we did was a prime example of exactly how banks create money out of thin air. So they take a document, usually it's called a mortgage agreement, and they basically use your signature. Now, that signature gets monetized. So what happens is they deposit that mortgage agreement as cash. It's in actual fact a promissory note. So that gets deposited into your account as cash. So the same way I took my closed check account down, that's exactly the same way those funds that for your mortgage are created. And then once she did the deposit and she'd stamped my book, I said thank you, and you know, I asked them, I said, oh, look, could you just please not be so excited, because I do have to get out of the bank and make it home safely. And they understood that. And so after that, I went out to the money machine and I went and got a balance. And I don't know if you've actually seen the documents, Vinny, but I've actually leaked some documents online to show the deposit slip and the balance from the ATM machine. And as you'll see, it's in the ledger fund, so which means that money in actual fact has been entered into the system. And it was a beautiful way to be able to show the people of New Zealand just how their mortgage agreement, the funds from their mortgage agreement are born.
I'd like to read you out something here, because Michael Laws actually got in on this. Did you see this thread?
No.
All right, this is great. This is the article out of openyoureyes.org.nz. Kerry Campbell of Harwood in New Zealand unlawfully arrested and detained after exposing massive banking fraud. I'm sure you're familiar with that piece. It was written about you. And the commenter, I think, is Marnie. I'm not sure if you know him. He says, make this go viral. Anyone else want $15 million deposited into their own bank account? This lady exposed the fraudulent banking and monetary system, the system we all use every day. And Michael Laws, I was quite surprised to see him even commenting on something on Facebook, let alone something like this. Seriously, Kerry Campbell is mad. This is tinfoil hat stuff. And I reply saying, ad hominem, pointing the argument at the person's character instead of any of the evidence brought up. Common propaganda tactic. He says, no, seriously, she is mad. Raving loony, listen to her. That's some serious psychological delusion she suffers from. And she has 8 kids too. Stay out of jail. Look after the bubs. And I go, really? What fact is mad? And what is your rebuttal? Calling someone mad is not an argument. It's schoolyard name calling. And he goes, no, it's a psychological assessment. Who believes in actions are not those of a sane person, and she exhibits classical delusional symptoms of someone suffering from mental illness. And she doesn't employ facts. She is following an internet conspiracy. And then I said, then I said to him, can you name what one of her claims is and why it's not true and the product of madness? No reply. So I go again. Conspiracy. Two or more people coming together to cause harm on another person or persons without them knowing about it. A conspiracy theorist. Is a person who believes that powerful people who have a lot of influence exercise their power to maintain or grow their influence. A coincidence theorist is a person who believes everything on earth happens by sheer coincidence. No such thing as lies. No such thing as backroom deals. And here's a quote. Woodward and Bernstein are conspiracy theorists. I am not a crook. Richard Milhouse Nixon, later exposed by Woodward and Bernstein as being part of a conspiracy and also a crook. And no reply from Michael Laws.
No. That's the problem with Michael Laws is we all know he's trained to basically debunk anybody. And he gets paid very, very well to be, to open up a can of worms, to lead a conversation in the totally wrong direction.
And then just bugger off whenever he gets asked a decent question that he can't answer,
right?
Because he's just so much of a bloody mainstream media attack dog piece of trash. All right, Kerry, we're coming to break now. And we'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, with the lovely Kerry Campbell in just a few minutes. Don't you go anywhere, folks.
We're gonna make love. You know how I know? Because it's Wednesday, and Wednesday night is the night that we usually make love. It's because it's when everything is just right. There's nothing good on TV.
Welcome back.
You haven't had your social netball team practice, so you're not too tired.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. My very special guest is the obviously mad Kerry Campbell. Yeah. Well, the thing is, if you have a few laughs and you can talk reasonably and you come up with facts, evidence, clear accounts of things that have happened, and somebody calls you nuts, I think that person's actually nuts. Have you ever heard of projection? You know, where you call the other person what you are. So let's read over Michael Laws. Let's read over the Michael Laws things again. Seriously, Michael Laws is mad. He's a tinfoil hat wearer. No, seriously, he is mad. A raving loony. Listen to him. It's some serious psychological delusions he suffers from. It suddenly makes sense. It's the exact same thing that I came up with the fluoride nutters. When I say fluoride nutters, I mean people who actually think that toxic waste is good for you. You know, they just call you what they are. It's quite hilarious, but also very frustrating.
I have a Facebook page about fluoride. It's called the National Register, the Case Against Fluoride. So, that's on Facebook. And I support all those who want to get the F out of the water.
Yeah. Hey, I think that's actually a really good campaign slogan that we should start up with,
Yeah.
Hamilton. Keep the F out of the water.
It's a beautiful slogan.
Yeah. Incidentally, it's a really bad idea to swim in the Waikato River, so it works both ways. Yes.
I agree. Funny, because I'm from the Waikato, right? So I was born in Hamilton and raised in a little town called Ngarawahia until I was seven years of age. And you could happily swim in that river quite easily back then. Now that was only so many that wasn't too many years ago. So I'm just shocked at the 20 years later you're not able to swim in that anymore.
I do think that this is one of the crazy things because what was it? I had hitched a ride down to the Temple of the Four Winds, the Kingitanga down there in Te Kawiri. And as we were cruising through the Waikato, the elders in the car were telling me stories about the rivers and everything. And apparently when they raised cattle, they made sure that at all times they stayed a good 50 metres back from the water, from the riverbank. And at night they'd take them a good 150 metres away from the riverbank. And the river was pristine. It was beautiful. I mean, in the 50s, for example, you could see the bottom of the Waikato River running through the middle of Hamilton.
Yes, right?
Now it's just some. It's almost like a freaking effluent outlet.
Yeah, I can imagine it is with Fonterra on the back there. then you've got Echo right across the road. It does look like some sort of effluent site. It looks more like a swamp than a river. So it just goes to show, you know, over the last 20 or so years, how much things have changed, you know. I understand that we're moving into a world of technology and modern technology, but, I mean, surely there's a better way, because is all that technology worth sacrificing our rivers for? I mean, our rivers are an important part to us, especially our Māori people. We've really got to ask ourselves, is it really worth, you know, losing some of our natural resources for? Because the Waikato River is, you're right, it's used by date.
It's like in Dune, you know, water is life. And so we destroyed it in order to save a farming industry. I think we're kind of getting a little off topic here, but I'll say one more thing about it. As you referenced, you know, the Māori people and their ties to the land and so on and so forth. I was once present at a meeting where a Māori representative who fronts for a trust that has been given, I think, a little over 100 rivers and lakes to take care of, and every single one of those rivers and lakes that this Māori trust has been given to take care of is currently in pristine condition. By contrast, every single lake and river that is currently under government custodian title is a polluted wasteland. I say that we need a nationwide thing to just give all of the rivers and lakes into Māori custodial title. I mean, that may sound like really radical, but at the end of the day, Māori seem to know how to make sure that the land and the waters don't get frickin' polluted.
That's right. That's right.
Look, if you're going to give the country to a prime minister who doesn't know how to run a country, why not, you know, Have you ever heard the phrase the best man for the job, or woman in your case? You know?
Yeah. Yes, I have.
Yeah. I mean, it's just that freaking simple, as far from where I'm sitting.
It is that simple. Māori have demonstrated it for years, long before colonization even came here. So I mean, it only makes sense to me as well. But anyway, that's another subject for another show, I think.
Oh,
and I could talk on that.
Yeah. And we have the babies in the background making an awful lot of noise. It's one of the things that comes with the territory, I guess.
Yeah. Yep, I'm real. Yeah. I'm a real person. I have children. They're pretty cool too, by the way.
Oh, choice.
Love to have them.
And so what actually happened? I mean, how did this whole banking thing really start for you? I mean, was there a first sort of experience that made you start questioning, or did you start questioning and then you started to have the experiences?
I heard about it. Actually, I was watching the Vinnie Eastwood show. I heard about it, and I watched a few things on YouTube about it, and I thought, you know, surely not. And then I actually took the time to stop and ask the question, yeah, why do they have the authority to make money? How come they do hold a lot of the resources? Like, I mean, as tangata whenua, our people here hold really nothing, because it's all been taken off them. But how is it that these people have come in and they hold all the authority? And how come they get to tell me what to do? I mean, because in my belief, I believe that the only person I answer to is God. So how is it that these people, through these laws, have some sort of authority over me? So when I started asking those sorts of questions, I went looking And I went looking for answers, and then I started finding that, maybe they don't have that sort of authority over me. Maybe it's just a presumed authority. And if I rebut it, then we'll see what happens. And that's exactly what happened. I rebutted their authority one day. So I was being threatened with arrest. And I just said, well, and he says, do you understand that? I'm going to arrest you. Do you understand that? And I said, absolutely not. I don't stand under that at all. He says, that's your law. My law is common law. You're subjected to that. So no, I don't stand under that. And then to look at the reaction on his face, it told me a thousand things. So he was shocked. He was stunned. He didn't know what to say other than, oh, look, I'm not in the mood for this cultural bullshit. And when he said that to me, I thought, hello, hang on, something's not right here. He didn't arrest me. Now, we all know that police officers are trained to wrap you up. They're trained to
lie.
They use tactics to basically put you in a dishonor position. And they're well trained and well versed to be able to do that. So, and generally any other time when they say they're going to arrest you, I've seen it, they arrest. And there is no ifs or buts about it. But one simple little statement, and that was, no, I don't stand under that. And it spun him off his feet. And I noticed it, I seen it. And I thought, we're onto something here. He's just backed down. And all I said was, no, I don't stand under that. So there's got to be some sort of truth in what I've been researching over the last, I think it was about a year back then. So I went looking for more information. And that's when I found, how banks are monetizing signatures, mortgage agreements are actually promissory notes. The governments only have presumed authority. And then I also found out that in 1933 that they declared bankruptcy, so there was no money, which also meant that the government had a fiduciary responsibility to be able to pay everyone's debts. So when you start finding out those sorts of things, you go looking for the information that backs it up, and that's all I did. I just went looking for the information to back it all up. And when I'd found all the information that solidified it for me, there was no going back after that. It really is about jumping down a rabbit hole, and the only way to get out of the rabbit hole is to keep going. You can't climb back out of it. You've just got to keep going till the end. And that's when I fell down the rabbit hole.
it's quite a rip-roaring ride, and I think it's almost a tragic existence. Don't you think?
Yeah, it is.
You figure out that there's some evil scumbaggery going down. You figure out the scam, and you start to scam the scammers, and then they just start scamming your bank with their scumbaggery again. You know?
Yeah, that's right.
It's I'm not doing anything that you can't do, all right? Yeah. Just, I've broken no freaking laws, have I?
Right. That's right. People need to look up the Bills of Exchange Act, and then they'll see what I've done is within the construct of their law anyway. So I didn't break any laws. And, I mean, you've got to ask yourself, if what I did was just a simple fraud charge, then why on earth did they abduct me from the courthouse? Why did they spend so much time trying to hide me? So I was abducted from the Hawera courthouse by... three officers and three black ops. Well, I call them black ops because I know they weren't officers. I know they were private police. Actually, we'll call them authorized personnel is what they're actually called. So I was abducted.
Wait, did you say authoritarian personnel, or was that just me hearing things?
Authorized personnel.
Okay. If you say so.
So I was abducted out of there, the courthouse on the Tuesday. Now, six people participated in my abduction from the Hawera courthouse. That is why my people, that were my supporters, that were only there to support me at court, it ended up turning into a bit of a what we call a protest, because they had abducted me from the courthouse and nobody knew where I was, where I'd gone, what they had done with me. they locked down that entire police station. So Hawera Police Station was closed that day. They closed it. Once I was kidnapped, they took me back to the Hawera Police Station and they held me there at the back of the police station and locked it down. They didn't allow anyone in or anyone out. And the only ones that were going out were obviously their staff. But that entire police station stopped working that day. They all stopped working, and what they did was the court clerks and everybody, the prosecutors, they all colluded with each other, and they were all telling my family and friends who came to support me at court that day, who were expecting me to appear, oh, look, she's pleaded guilty and we've shipped her off to Arahata, and which was an absolute lie, because we all know that a judge cannot take a guilty plea without a lawyer present. So a lot of people don't even realise that I didn't even make it to court that day, that I was abducted from the courthouse before I even made it up to appear. And then they took me back to Hawera Police Station. They held me captive there, shut down the police station, and they all gathered around the back of the building and around the cell, and they all had a court hearing without a lawyer present in the Hawera Police Station. So, and now they recorded it. Now, I was made, like, the officer, Officer Ivan Smith came in and he says to me, now, listen, I want you to listen up real good before you say or do anything. He says, you know, I want you to think about what you're going to say, and I want to think about what you're going to do, because, you know, this is going to be your deciding factor. And I sort of looked and I says, okay, all right then, yep. Okay, I accept that, because I'm really scared right now, because A, I've just been abducted from the courthouse. B, I've just been given a whore of a hiding. I've been choked, I've been strangled, I've been ragdolled, I've had my hair pulled, I've been thrown, I was thrown into the cell and I smacked my face on the toilet bowl. So I was extremely scared. I was actually half expecting nighttime to come, and I was half expecting them to put me in a van somewhere, take me out the back and shoot me. That's how scared I was. So, and you know, you see the article in the paper, there's an article and they're putting me in the car and I am screaming. I'm screaming like there's nobody's business. Now, in that article, they said that I was charged. But that photo there that they showed with that article is actually the photo of them abducting me from the courthouse. Okay, so that's why I had that frightened, absolutely petrified look on my face, because I was being abducted right there and then. And then they tried to use that photo and said, oh, yep, she pleaded guilty, she was charged, blah, blah, blah. But that's not the truth at all. The actual truth of it was I was abducted. I was shipped around the country from Tuesday to Thursday, and I was...
Hold on, Kerry. We're coming to break now, and we'll be right back. Ladies and gentlemen, Kerry Campbell from Taranaki. Don't you go anywhere, folks. Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week. Next week, it's going to be daylight savings. Oh, yeah, I think I might actually take a week off because I've got a lot of videos and stuff to catch up on, fluoride meetings, Dr. Paul Connett's visit back in March. I still haven't finished that video, a couple of other products and advertisements that we need to get recorded for the network and so on and so forth. So, yeah, I think I'm probably going to have to take next week off. And then when we come back, it'll come back at the new time, Tuesday through Saturday, for those in New Zealand, 11 a.m. Till 1 p.m. and it'll run like that for a month until November the 4th when the U.S. time zone clicks over, and then it'll be back to midday till 2 p.m. for the duration of the summer. And it's going to be nice because I do like to stay up late and I do like to sleep in. Did I just appear very lazy there? I think I did. Okay. My very special guest is Kerry Campbell. And while we were over the break, you were talking about when you were in the cells after they'd abducted you. And let me explain something like this to people, okay? I've been arrested before, but I was arrested because of a warrant. I was charged. And even that by itself was pretty scary. It's probably the most horrific, most traumatic thing I've ever gone through in my entire life. Now, I've never been abducted by anybody without just cause. And so I can imagine it would probably be 2, 3, 4, 5 times as traumatic as it was. And it was so traumatic to me that it nearly destroyed me. So this is the kind of stress and pressure and so on and so forth that the establishment uses against you if you expose their frickin' scam. Now, you told me that while you were in their possession, like one of their possessions,
yeah,
there were three men who tried to dislocate your shoulder.
Yeah, that's right, that's right. Three men on one arm, which I can imagine that they... Part of the order was to just like break something and teach her a lesson. And so three men on one, they're physically trying to snap my shoulder. And as I kept screaming to them and saying, please stop, stop, you're going to break it, you're going to break it, stop it. You know, they didn't relent. But I actually have a screw in my arm anyway, because I've had a dislocated shoulder and I've had surgery on it, so, which is probably why they struggled to snap it, because it's a pretty solid rod in there. So failing that, they attempted to break my wrist, and then in failing that, they attempted to snap fingers. But like I was saying to you, it was evident that the support and all the energy that I was being sent from right across the world. Now, I mean, the entire, you know, right across the globe. It was obviously wrapping me up like a protective blanket, because three men on one arm, and I'm not a very big person. I'm only a tiny person. But for three men to fail in trying to dislocate my shoulder, it was unbelievable. But I mean, like I say to people, if what I did was a simple fraud case, if I committed fraud, then why did they go to such hassle in A, abducting me from the courthouse, B, shipping me around the entire country? So I was shipped all over the place, and they never left me anywhere longer than a day or a night. So I was shipped from police station to police station. Now, my team were following me. They were using their resources, and they were tracking me down. And so every word that they got, yep, she's in Whanganui police station, they would shoot over to Whanganui. Whanganui would be like, oh, no, she's not here. Don't know what you're talking about. And then so they'd pull their resources in again. They'd say, oh, no, look, they've taken her to Palmerston North. So my team would chase me to Palmerston North, get to Palmerston North, and they've gone and picked me up and moved me again. So this was happening for a period of 2 days. So from Tuesday to Thursday, I was shipped around the countryside, and the Howard police were hiding me. And they were pulling in all their resources of their authorised personnel to make sure. I was actually only allowed to be with authorised personnel. I was not allowed to be around anyone. I was to be in supervised care, which meant under the radar, under a camera, being listened to, being watched, being heard, all of it. Now they had the hearing at the station. So like I said to you, they shut down after I was abducted, they finally got rid of my supporters and my family that were at the court. And they were protesting me at this stage because they wanted to know where I was, what did they do to me, and, you know, was I alive? Was I even alive? Once they were able to basically bullshit everyone and tell everyone, oh, yeah, no.
Look, by the way, this is FCC-regulated radio, so you have to say BS.
Oh, sorry.
It matters not. Continue.
Too late. So once they managed to swindle everyone, everyone left and they came back to my house and they had a bit of a hooey here. But while they were doing that, the entire court, so the court clerk, the registrar, sorry, the security guard, that I already have on notice too, by the way, and the entire Hawera police station stopped working that day, and they all came to the Hawera police station and stood outside my cell. They all stood outside my cell to intimidate me, to make sure that what I said was what they wanted to hear. So anyway, the judge walks in and he says, right, what are you going to offer me that will convince me that you're not going to do this again, to let you go? And I said, listen, I am so scared right about now. I'm scared for my life. I want to return home to my children. That I will just do whatever you want me to do. He says, no, I don't want you to do it because you want, you know, I want you to. I want you to do it because you want it. Now, what are you going to offer me? And I said to him, I will do whatever you want me to do. I will say and do whatever you want. If you want me to plead guilty. I will plead guilty. I will take the rap. I'll do whatever it takes, please. I just want to go home to my children. I just want to be a mum again. And I'm very sorry that I've even done this, because I now understand that you guys are capable. You are highly dangerous. So I'm just going to do whatever you want me to do. Okay. And he's like, okay, all right, then. Well, I accept that. And so one of the officers says, oh, okay, so are we going to take a guilty plea? And he says, no, we're not going to take a guilty plea because we've got no lawyer present. I can't take a guilty plea when we've got no lawyer present. And he says, so what we'll do, send her back.
Hold on. So now they're worried about doing things legally.
Yeah, that's right. So in that case, they says, okay, well, we'll send her to New Plymouth and we'll hold her there. And he says, then we'll hold you there and we'll see you back here again on Friday. I says, yep, okay, whatever. If that's what you want, if that's what gets me returned home safely to my children, I will do whatever you want. And I'm very sorry that, you know, I've caused all of this grief for you. But you know, I do want to let you know that I did inform the government and I do have a claim of right. And I said, and you're charging me with using a document for pecuniary advantage. I says, under the Crimes Act, I do have a claim of right. So therefore this charge does not apply to me. And he says, no, you forget all about that. And I said, but the government's been foreclosed. They've been foreclosed. They're in a state of bankruptcy. And I says, and not only that, they're all acting and nobody knows it. And he says, no, you forget all of that. Okay. I don't want to hear any more of that. And we'll talk on Friday. I says, oh, okay, all right. So I just realized that, yeah, don't go any further with that talk, Kerry, because it's not going to get you out. So what I did was I played the game with them. I did whatever they wanted. I was polite. I was always polite to their staff. Now, even when they put me in Arohata, so I was shipped to Arohata for the night as well, and I was returned back to New Plymouth on the Thursday afternoon. So we actually had a court hearing. I was actually charged and convicted on the Thursday, not the Tuesday. So the paper told everyone that I was charged on the Tuesday, but I was in actual fact charged on the Thursday. Because from Tuesday to Thursday.
You mean the paper didn't get its reporting right? You don't say.
Yeah. That's exactly what I'm saying. Now we all know that we've come to know that whole thing, they colluded with each other. Now, although he said Friday, they were bringing me back Friday to New Plymouth, what that was just a deterrent to be able to distract everyone and to give everyone the wrong information so that no one would show up at my court hearing. So they told everyone it was Friday, where in actual fact we had court after court had closed. So after 5 o'clock, they took me into the courthouse and we had a closed court session.
This is like so cloak and dagger, bro. Oh my God.
I know. They covered their tracks really, really well. But what they don't realize is by doing so, by acting in that corrupt manner, they were only exposing themselves even further. So we had a closed court hearing on the Thursday. So I wasn't actually charged and convicted until the Thursday, despite what the papers said, Taranaki Daily News, naughty, naughty. Charged on the Thursday. And now when I was charged, when I was going up to court, it was not standing.
Hold on, Kerry. We'll continue this after the break. Ladies and gentlemen, at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com, don't you go anywhere. We'll be back in less than 5 minutes. welcome, ladies and gentlemen. It is now hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness and inhuman cops trying to dislocate your shoulder, if you lose your sense of humour, you'll go freaking nuts. And where were we at? We were at, so you were walking up to the court on Thursday.
Yeah, that's right. We had a closed court hearing. So court was after 5 o'clock. It was quite funny because, I mean, I wasn't even aware of this. If you remember correctly, when we were at the cell having the hearing, they told me court was Friday. So on my way back from being brought back from Arohata, they're taking us to New Plymouth. So we were meant to spend the night in New Plymouth and then appear at the court on Friday, which is what they told everyone too, by the way. Where in actual fact, we arrive in New Plymouth on the Thursday evening, just a little after 5 o'clock, and we don't go towards the police station. And now I'm travelling with another passenger, and we both notice that, hey, we're going the wrong way. This is not going towards the New Plymouth police station.
Did an image flash into your head of being driven into some place in the middle of the bush or something like that, and being executed by?
Many a time. And at that point, I was sitting there starting to panic because, I already knew I consider myself to be the equivalent of Edward Snowden, so on a New Zealand, the New Zealand equivalent. Because we know what
don't you mean? Don't you mean Chelsea Snowden?
Yeah, that's the one. I was when I noticed we weren't going towards the police station, I thought, oh no, what on earth is happening now? Where are they taking me? What is going to happen? So I imagine that we were going to roll into some big, huge warehouse somewhere, and they were just going to yank me out, take the other girl away and deal to me, good and proper. And, I was tossing and turning because I knew I had behaved myself. I knew I didn't cause them any grief that the whole time that they had abducted me and they were, tramping me all around the countryside. So I was very polite to them the whole time. So I didn't even give them any sort of reason to want to try and do that to me. And I played the game really, really well. So when we veer off in New Plymouth and we head towards another direction, I'm thinking, heck, where are we going? And then I noticed, hey, we're outside the courthouse. What are we doing outside the courthouse? So when we get there, there's paparazzi everywhere. So obviously they knew that I was going to be there. And that, you know, the cameras are going crazy. And the passenger, the girl that came up with me from Arohata, she was appearing on the Friday. She was like, hey, look, there's paparazzi. What on earth is going on? I said, your friend, don't worry. It's, they're only here for me. It's okay. And she's like, no, what's going on? What's going on? And I said, well, I sort of explained to you a little bit about what I did yesterday, but now you're going to get a full taste of of what we actually did. So that's why the paparazzi are here. And I said, but don't worry about it. Just put your hoodie on or something.
And the paparazzi, incidentally, didn't really report on any of this.
No, they didn't. They only reported what they wanted to. So now,
well, what exactly did they report? I mean specifically. Oh,
they basically said that I... Oh, they lied and they said
Hold on. Before you continue. You said they said... Who's they specifically?
Oh, sorry, are we talking Taranaki Daily News.
Are they the only ones that did reporting at all?
Taranaki Daily News and Whanganui Chronicle and the Stratford paper. So
none of the majors. None of the majors. None of the Dominion Post.
None of the majors. None of the majors touched it. Now... The three papers that did touch the story, they all had completely different versions. So you only need to go and put all three versions in front of you and you'll crack up laughing because they all tell a different story. So they're all highlighting themselves as all the biggest BS artists.
So, that was close.
Yeah, that was real close. That's all that did. It just highlighted who the corrupt outlets were and who weren't. And
Taranaki Daily News. Have you got copies of these articles or links to them?
Actually, I do. So at some stage, I'll go in and find them and I'll send them to you. And you can have a look. You'll laugh when you see all three of them together because they all tell different stories of events. And it's actually through putting those three articles together that you can work out where and how they've lied and how they've made everything up. And you're sort of like, but hang on Tuesday they said that she was convicted on Tuesday. And then you go and read Stratford's paper, it says she was convicted on Thursday. I mean, you know, so they highlight themselves beautifully. And it doesn't take a rocket scientist. You know, before we did what we did, we knew we were, I knew I was going to be arrested. So, I mean, I'd set my team up and I said to them, look, we know I'm going to be arrested sooner or later, but that's okay because we've got things in place for all of that. Not only that, I said, then we know the media is going to have a frenzy with us. We know that they are going to make me out to be the Osama bin Laden. And that's what they did, but we knew that. But we also made available to the people on the internet all the information so that when the paper came out with their lies, people would get interested and they'd be like, hey, what was 15,065,000? That's a headliner, right? So, you know, we knew that they would go looking. So, and that's what's happened. People that have originally believed me to be nothing but a fraudster and going around and believing these articles, going around ripping local businesses off, have actually come back to me and said, oh my gosh, I have to apologize to you. And I said, look, you don't have to apologize to me. We knew everything. We knew what the media was going to do. We knew what people were going to say because it's been happening for years. So we knew exactly what systems to put in place. And they said, well, you know, since we've been, you know, we read what was in the newspapers and we thought you were nothing but a fraudster. And they said, but then we went on the internet and we Googled your name and we came across a whole pile of other stories that didn't match up with what the newspapers were telling us. And they said, and then we found your radio shows and oh my gosh. Wow. Thank you. You have got me off the fence. So I received many messages like that. For many non-believers, many people who believe I'm nothing but a fraudster, they're all coming back and just, you know, they're looking at the facts and they're weighing it up themselves. And what that does is it makes it their own experience. It means we haven't gone and trying to convince anybody. These people have actually taken their own initiative and researched it to have their own experience. And the beauty of it is that they're able to come out of it later and say, wow, you've opened my eyes to something really, really big. And it's something that we need to back you up on. We need to build a campaign around you with it. And we need to support you. And we need to wake up this country and get the entire country to back you with this. So that was our goal. The reason why we did what we did, although Michael Laws likes to call us mad, and you can call us mad, because I suppose, you know, what I did was I basically nailed my body to a cross. So to speak, but the reason.
Well, it is an insane world, and you're the one, and you're the sane person. So naturally, you're the mad one.
Yeah, that's right. So I mean, the reason why we did it was because we wanted to create an event big enough to attract enough attention. Because what we found is that the entire world is in disarray. They're all the people are rising against their governments because they've had enough. They're putting their foot down. They're not taking any more. But little old New Zealand is so comfortable. They are just still sleeping. So what we wanted to do was we wanted to create an event big enough that attracted enough attention to get these people off the couch and looking into it. And that's exactly what's happened. People have got off the couch, they've seen the newspapers, and then they've gone looking for more info because it's an interesting story. And when they do, they stumble upon what we've made available to them. And what we put out there long before I even started getting arrested. And then they're able to weigh up the options. Then they're able to sniff out where the paper has lied and manipulated. You know, because we all know that papers are great at creating presumptions. So although it reads one way, you can easily interpret it another way. So papers are great at it. That's their job. So
it's really difficult for me. It's really difficult for me reading papers or news articles or watching television news or whatever, because I know for a fact that almost everything they're telling me is a lie. But the problem is, I don't know what the actual truth is in order to point out which parts are lies. You know,
And the way you identify that is just purely listening. And I mean, you and I both know you're highly skilled. The reason why you would struggle to listen to that is because you already know that they're lying to you, right? So you're already sniffing out. Okay, but so what I've done is I've learnt the words. When you go and learn the words, then you look at the words that they use, and then you know exactly what they're telling you. And that's how I'm able to sniff out what the lie is, what they're trying to hide, what the real story is. And that's just through learning the real interpretations of the word. So, you know, when you're dealing in law, you want to go and look up the interpretation of a word under law. For example, you know, you don't want to go and, if you're dealing with law, you don't want to go and get an Oxford dictionary and take that understanding, because it doesn't, it means something totally different. And that's where, you know, knowing the difference between English and legalese comes in as well.
Yeah, you know, you get your Black's Law and your Butterworths.
Oh, yes, yep, definitely, all of it. Anything, really, anything that helps you, because, I mean, how I've operated is I've taken a bit of everyone's information and I've formulated my own sort of picture.
Well, that's interesting you should say that, because there were a number of people who were accusing you of, what was it, the OPPT, the Open People's Public Trust, or something of that nature. Yeah. Somebody accused them of ordering you around and getting you into trouble or something of that nature. I presume that was BS.
Rubbish. You know, I'm not even affiliated to the One People's Public Trust.
Really? Not at all?
Not at all. When I stumbled on them, I was actually already on my own path of doing exactly what they had done. So it just so happened that they had beat me to the punchline. But, you know, you've got to remember, they've got a whole team of people working on this. I was just one person. So I was actually already on my own path of doing exactly what the One People's Public Trust done. I was going to foreclose. Now, I wasn't going to do it on such a grand scale that they did, because I was just going to do it for my family, just so that I knew that when it's my time to pass away, my children are going to be safe. My children are going to be looked after. They're going to be educated. They're going to know the stuff. And that's why I did it, was because I wanted to make sure my family was going to be protected. Because, I mean, when we all go, who's going to protect them? You know, if we don't put these tools into place now and we don't put the systems into place, what have they got? They've got this nasty world that with this elite select group of people that have that live under the fantasy that they have full control and authority over people. Where in actual fact, it's just a presumption. And if you're above them, then you'll soon see just how much it is just an act. They're all paid actors, as far as I'm concerned. So for people to affiliate me with the One People's Public Trust and to say that they were bossing me around and they were making me do it. Oh, rubbish. I've got my own mind. I stand on my own two feet. I was already on this path. It just so happened that when I came across them, oh, I tell you what, it was a big relief when I found them, because it was like, yes, this is what I'm looking for, because this is what I'm trying to do. You know, and so what I did was I started researching them and I looked into the technologies that they had produced, and I just took bits and pieces from here and there. And I formulated my own system, my own plan. So for people to say that, it's just uneducated comments and hearsay. It's nonsense, absolute nonsense.
Well, and that's why I like to actually interview people, is because that way I can have a look, because I hear all these claims and so on and so forth, and I don't give any of them any credence until I actually get to talk to the person and get the truth from the horse's frickin' mouth. And that's the problem with a lot of people who are using the internet nowadays. I mean, it's just like, on the one spectrum, you've got people like Michael Laws who say everything's an internet conspiracy and nothing on the internet is true. Incidentally, the New Zealand Herald's on the internet and so is the New Zealand government, ergo he's probably correct quite a lot. The other element of it is, look, you can't actually judge people or judge what they're doing, what they think, without actually asking them. Right, it's one of the classic mistakes. If you come out pointing fingers when you haven't even taken a frickin' proper look, then naturally you're not going to be pointing any fingers in the right direction. You're going to wind up getting them snapped off.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Not only that, people make so many uneducated comments that they make themselves look silly. You know, and they end up having to be the ones that come back and go with their tail between their legs saying, sorry for saying things like that about you, and I didn't realise and I didn't know. And it's like, well, rather than mouthing off to begin with, you should have found out, you should have taken the time. Now, when I found out everything I knew, I didn't go around judging anybody. I didn't go around saying, oh, they're all conspiracy theorists, oh, they're all nutters. I actually looked at it and I tried to give a biased, you know, a non-biased opinion, and I tried to weigh up the options. So I tried to, my job was to sort the disinfo from the truth. So what I did was, you know, a lot of people coming up with all these claims, you know, you've got the free man movement, you've got the sovereignty movement, you've got all sorts. And
all the hapus and all of those different people who are trying to come to freedom in their own way. And what I've figured out is that everybody comes to the truth in their own way, and there's no one way.
No, there isn't. So people need to get out of the mindset that there is this way or the highway, because it's absolute nonsense that it's, there's only one way. There is a myriad of ways that you can come in on this. And how I look at it is that we actually all need to come together despite our differences and use our tools collectively with each other. And that is the only way through it, really. If we're not doing that, then we're only dividing ourselves against each other, which doesn't put us any closer to our own freedom. Because we think we're free, but we're not. We're not free at all. And when we go out and do some homework, I only take on board something that I know. I know with absolute conviction. So when I know it and I'm going out participating in it, it's because I've done my homework. And those who don't know it and don't understand it, all I can say is just go and do some homework. Go and start simply. You know, don't try and cram it all into your head, because you won't. And you can't give it to everybody all at once, because they just don't know their brains. Like you said, there's some sort of parasite, and it really does affect the brain that they are not competent or capable of being able to process the information in their own mind, really.
Oh, it just goes over their head. You know, you get that glassy-eyed kind of...
The blank
looks there. Yeah. Because, it's just, you have to be versed. It's sort of like if I was to come at you and say K equals X times Y equals 3, and you'd be like, what? You know, you're just telling me a bunch of random letters and numbers, and it doesn't make any sense. Of course I don't understand that. But if I was to get you through a course say, economics or macroeconomics or something of that nature, where that's actually one of the formulas for how the economy runs without running out of funds or whatever, suddenly it makes sense to you. There's an awful lot of background story and background knowledge to almost every simple equation, is what I've learned. And unless you're willing to find out the backstory before being told the equation, it won't matter, because you won't understand it. We'll be right back after the break at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Kerry Campbell is my guest. Look at me, welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest is the lovely and illustrious Kerry Campbell. What was interesting, Kerry, is that a couple of days before you were due in court that first time, I actually got a message, I think might have been from one of your supporters, asking me to come down to Hawera to film your non-existent court appearance, as it turned out. film your kidnapping. And I would have done it had I not been freaking broke. And see, this is the thing. This is why I asked for donations from the listeners, ladies and gentlemen, and this is the reason why I asked for you to give subscriptions of a couple of dollars a month, $5 a month or whatever, okay? Because there are a lot of stories, very intricate, interesting, and important stories that happen in other areas of the country, which I could, you know, it's only like 70-odd bucks or whatever to just jump on a plane and get down there inside of an hour sort of thing, whether it be Wellington or Christchurch stories or whatever. I wish I had the resources in order to do this, because if I was capable of traveling around the country to cover really important things, record interviews and so on and so forth from activists around the nation that are all exposing very, very in intricate detail the scumbaggery of this government and the New World Order complex and the legal system and so on and so forth, I would be doing it. Okay, and if you want to see me do it, then please, by all means, go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. That's Vinny with a Y, because it's the most important question. And Eastwood as in go ahead, make my news. And make a donation. Preferably make a subscription. That regular income coming in means I don't have to worry about whether or not my rent's paid or whatever, and I'll have extra income for megaphones, microphones, cameras, computers, so on and so forth, airplane tickets, gas money, all of the resources that I actually need in order to be New Zealand's alternative media. I basically already am. In terms of radio and video, there just ain't no freaking competition. Okay, it doesn't matter which direction you're looking at. There is nobody in this country with the guts and with the determination that I have to get the truth out, whatever the freaking truth might be. The only other options that you have are biased lefties or biased right-wingers who lie to you ad nauseum, okay? If you want the truth, you're going to have to pay for it, unfortunately. That is the immutable truth that I've come to. If you want to walk with God, if you want to do the right thing, if you want to learn things, if you want to learn the truth and have the honor and the courage to actually uphold those things that you hold dear, the things that truly matter to your nation, to your species, you are going to have to give something up. You're either going to have to give up your time, or like me, you're going to have to give up your life, or the life that you thought you had, or you can give up some money and give it to me so that I can do the job in your stead. Please go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com, subscribe today. We'll give you some commercial-free archives, save you half an hour of listening time per show. Hey, in fact, Gary, here's an interesting statistic for you. I was just looking up on my page's statistics the other day, right? And got nearly 10,000 people visited. And on the commercial-free archives page, like the average length of a commercial-free archive is about an hour and a half. The average visit to that page is 2 hours and 40 minutes.
What?
So people are actually going, and I understand why, because there was this one day when I was wanting to listen to some other show, you know, it was just like, man, I want to listen to some radio today. And so I pumped up like five different shows, five different networks. You know, one turned me into a fetal position. Nah, turn that off. One of them was so annoying and new agey, wanted me to stab myself in the ear with a screwdriver. Nah, turn that off. One of them was all talking about Jews and guns and gold and so on and so forth. Nah. And then I started listening to my own commercial-free archives. And before I knew it, I'd listened to six in a row. Right? This show is really, really fast. And trust me, when it's uninterrupted, you can just keep listening and listening and listening and listening until you run out of time to listen. That's how awesome this show is.
I agree with you, Vinny, because like I said, when I stumbled on you a few years ago, I used to just sit and listen and listen and listen, and I would replay, because it's a fantastic show. And in fact, a number of years ago, I actually visualized that when all of this came to a halt and the government and everyone were exposed for the corrupt corporations that they really are, then you and your radio show would be the alternative leading media. And, I mean, you already are, right? There's no doubt about it, and I will back you up. I mean, we really need to build a campaign around you, Vinny. And we really, really need, like you said, we need to start taking up those subscriptions that you have, because what you offer is a valuable service, and it's a service that nobody can touch. Nobody can even come near you, Vinny. So I really believe that we need to build a campaign around you, and I'm very happy to be able to help do that, because I think it's important that we all get on board and support you with what you're doing. And like you said, if we all get on board and support you and back you up, even if it just be a couple of dollars a week each, that's going to put you in the position to be able to keep doing what you're good at. Because let's face it, Vinny, you're the best at it in this country, no doubt about it.
I would like to be able to hire and like have enough donations to actually hire a intern, okay, and pay him a little bit so that they can live off it. You know, about the same as what I got paid for back in the day, just to do a lot of the monkey business, basically. You know, I do a lot of monkey business. We do yeah. the old audio editing, the uploading, the archiving, the video editing, and so on and so forth. It's not actually that complicated. It's very, very simple to do. It's just very time consuming. Had I not that commitment to do all of that extra editing and uploading and stuff all of myself, I would have an extra 40 hours a week or something of that nature free to go out and do other stuff, you know? There's just, look, I'm trying to run a one-man multimedia empire here, okay? And I'm actually succeeding at it pretty much by myself, just on the good will and the donations of decent people around this world who actually care about the future of humanity. Okay, I don't see anybody else in this country, or many people really anywhere in the world for that matter, actually doing that.
No.
You know, I think I've got street cred, yo.
I think you've got a bit of street cred there.
Yes. Well, anyway, enough about me. Back onto the subject of yourself. Yeah. I was wondering over the break there while I was taking a WikiLeak about your children. Who the hell was taking care of your children while you were locked up?
Okay, I had all my family here. So their dad arrived, everybody really. They all just came, you know, it was amazing to see the show of support. So the children's dad arrived, my mum arrived. All of my family, because I've got quite a bit of family here in Taranaki, apparently my house was jam-packed with people. And I had all my aunties, my uncles, everybody. They were all here. So they were all participating and running the house, taking care of the kids, feeding them, getting them off to school, and just doing all the things that they needed to do.
Did you find that out after the fact, or did you know this going in?
No, I found that out after the fact.
So when you were in there, you might have been thinking about your babies and who the hell is taking care of them.
I'll tell you what, the whole time when I got abducted, the whole time, that's, you know, because I'm quite a resilient person. Not only that, I'm a very strong and I'm a very fearless person. But that really broke me because when you never ever wish for anyone to ever be kidnapped, let alone to actually experience it. Now, when you've been kidnapped like that in such a horrible, horrific way, all I could think about was, oh, my gosh, my family, I was more worried for them. I was more worried for my children, my mum, their dad, because they would have been worried. They would have been sick with worry. With heck, what have they done with her? Have they killed her? Are we ever going to get to see her again? And then when that photo came out with me in the paper, that just absolutely broke their heart. It broke their heart because the last thing they ever heard, they're all sitting in court waiting for me to be brought into the dock. And the last thing they ever hear is me screaming and begging and pleading for help and for them to stop breaking my shoulder. And, you know, that's all they remember. So, my memories were while I was in their custody. I mean, because obviously I was I was suffering from traumatic stress after they'd done what they'd done to me. Now, I was laying there and, like, you know, you go and close your eyes and you can see everything happening all over again. So every 5 minutes I closed my eyes, I was being abducted all over again. I could hear myself screaming. I could hear myself pleading and begging. I could see them grabbing me. I could see them. I could feel them and see them gagging me again because they gagged me. And I was just, you know, I was physically laying there on the bed and I was having jolts and because of the stress, the traumatic stress that I'd just gone through. But what hurt the most was the fact that my children and my family didn't know where I was. They didn't know what had happened to me. The last thing they heard was me screaming and begging and pleading for help. They were actually appointing the officers that were in the courtroom that day. They were actually all appointing them peace officers. They said, "We appoint you peace officers. Go and help her." They said, "Oh, she's all right. She's acting." So they even failed in their roles. Now, that was Frank Grant. Frank Grant, he's the chief down at Haora. He failed in his role miserably.
Sounds like they're more like a piece of something officer.
Well, yeah. You know what's strange is what I find weird about is that They swear in as peace officers. So the very mandate that gives them that authority or that uniform is as a peace officer. They swear an oath to uphold the law of the land. Where in actual fact, you know, when they get into that business, into that uniform, they start acting like policy enforcement officers. And then they overwrite the law of the land with their statutory law. And then they try and trick everyone and they say, well, statutory common law is subordinate to statutory law. It's like, oh, rubbish. Common law gives birth to that. You know, I don't even know how you think statutory law is above. Are you trying to say statutory law is above God? but I mean,
well, basically, they're just lying. They're just lying because they got no other justification.
But Frank Grant, he failed. He failed, and his officers, that entire Hawera team, they failed in their role as peace officers. The very mandate that swore them into that authority, they failed. Not only did they fail, but they refused. So they refused to be peace officers.
I had Dean Clifford on the other day, and when they took him for like nearly a month in solitary confinement, he was very happy about it because he knew that when he got out, private prosecution time, and he's going to be bucking for early retirement. Are you planning on some kind of reprisal of that nature for illegal kidnapping and scumbaggery?
Yeah, I've just invoiced the Hawera Police Station 1.3. Well, not the Hawera Police Station, but those officers in their private capacity. I've just invoiced them a total of $1.3 million in invoices. Now, that's not for kidnapping me. That's just for breach of contract. So back in June, I've actually got a contract with Sergeant Ivan Smith. Now, I appointed him a peace officer, and I requested that he come and assist me because I was assaulted down at the courthouse. I was assaulted by a alleged security guard down there. And when I went down to the police station and I said to them, listen, I need to serve this notice on the security guard who has just assaulted me. He's harassed me and assaulted me. And I require your assistance. Ivan Smith absolutely refused. He said, look, I've got better stuff to do than to worry about your shit. Sorry, excuse the language. There I go again. But those were his exact words. And I said to him, well, what sort of officer are you? Are you not a peace officer? Is it not your duty to protect the people? And he was like, oh, look, just get out now or I'm gonna trespass you. And I said, no, I'm not getting out. I just need to borrow your counter for a quick second. And I reached over and I helped myself to one of the little post-its and a pen. And I said to him, now, can you quote that BS Act again? And he says, oh, it's a Court Security Act. I says, right, well, under the Court Security Act, I require your identification then. And he says, oh, look, I've got a card here. Here, take the card. And he says, now get out or I'm going to arrest you. And I says, no, well, I don't stand under that. And here you go. Here's a notice for you. And at that instant, I served a friendly reminder notice on him, which accepts for value and his oath, the very mandate that swore him into authority. And on that notice, he says, oh, look, he goes, oh, you know, whatever, this is just nonsense. And I says, no, you and I have a contract now because I've accepted for value your oath to uphold the law of the land. So you and I have a contract and it's going to stick to your backside like glue. And then on that note, I walked out and I went and served the notice on my own. So I went back down to the court, Hawera Courthouse, and I served the notice on Craig Vertonghen because he was the security man that was harassing me and assaulted me that day. I was just in the courthouse minding my own business. In fact, I got a visitor and someone had specifically asked me to come down and support them at court. So when I got down there, I was harassed by this officer and then eventually he manhandled me, dragged me out of the court and threw me out of the court. So on that note, I served him with a courtesy notice. So that's how I've invoiced them because I currently do have a contract with Ivan Smith. And it basically says that if any of his colleagues, if he conspires with any of his colleagues...
We'll finish this after the break there, Kerry. You know, I do think that it would be quite awesome, don't you think, if the police, who are responsible for a lot of the injustice in New Zealand, actually had to pay for it. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Don't you go anywhere, folks. Thank you. Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week for your listening pleasure, Monday through Friday in the United States, 3 till 5 Pacific, 5 till 7 Central, 6 till 8 Eastern, and in the Uber Kingdom, 11 p.m. till 1 a.m. My very special guest here today is Kerry Campbell, and we only have one more segment, about 10 to 12 minutes in order to wrap this up for you. Kerry, where can people go to get further information after this broadcast is over?
Actually, we have a great site. I always point people to my Facebook page. So, but there's a Exodus link on there that I want to point people to specifically. There's some great information on there. In regards to our processes, what's happened, what's been happening, and what we're doing about it. So we've put a lot of things in place. And so what I will say is just go to the go and find Kerry Campbell on Facebook, and just start from there, because all the information that I know, everything that I know, I share it on that Facebook page. So I would point everyone there.
Okay, and that Facebook page, for those of you who want to know, is facebook.com/ Matariki Edgecomb, M-A-T-A?
No, not that one.
No? Is this not yours? Because I just got it from...
Yeah, no, it's the Kerry Campbell one. That's my private one.
Oh, okay, this is your private one. So where is the Kerry Campbell one? Because this is the only... your private one is the only one I got.
Oh, really? Oh, you're being ripped off, isn't he? Okay, let me just...
Hey, it wouldn't be the first time. I do live in a bankster-controlled country.
Let me just pull up the details for you. Hang on a minute.
Yeah. Well, we can do that after the show. I'll just pop it onto... I found you.
You got me?
Yeah.
You're at it.
The one with you smiling on the webcam kind of thing. So it's Kerry.Campbell. All right. Facebook.com/ Kerry.Campbell. There we go. That's nice. All right. All sorted. That's where you can go, ladies and gentlemen. All right. So in order to wrap up this particular broadcast, there's a lot of people who listen to this show, and I saw a quote the other day, something along the lines of knowledge without application is worthless. You've got a lot of knowledge on this particular subject, and you've managed to apply it. And a lot of people ask me, you know, Vinny, I'm thinking about doing this. Should I go into it? And I say, well, to be honest, almost everybody who I've seen don this mode of resistance against the system, going after the legalese fictitian, is often harassed by police, arrested without charge, sometimes tortured, often bankrupted, even though they've broken no law and haven't actually bought anything prohibitively expensive. So it's a, you know, go into it with both eyes wide open and know what it is you're fighting for. You're not just fighting for yourself and your own freedom. You're actually laying bricks of a giant road and a pathway through which other people, future, further generations down the track, even this very generation itself, might have a much easier path towards freedom.
Yes, that's our goal, is to provide that, because the system was designed to so that people would never discover the corruption, never discover the truth. So what we've done is we've got a whole team right across the world. We've got some really, really smart, talented individuals who are putting together all of this information, and they're putting together packs as well. So they're making this information available as a pack. So depending on what path you wish to take in this, will determine what pack you want to take and you want to move forward with and start applying. So I'm glad you pointed that out, because you're quite correct. There's no good in having all of this knowledge if you don't know how to apply it.
See, I'm not applying it, and I notice the intense hypocrisy in giving platforms to this kind of speech and these kind of things, is because I'm not willing to sacrifice that much for my freedom. I'm already sacrificing 60, 70 hours a week trying to make sure that these stories at least get out there. Yet I'm wondering whether or not that's even justifiable, you know, because I'm not practicing what I preach, yet I'm just preaching.
Yeah. You know, I think you do a good job. So what you are doing, Vinny, whether you choose to acknowledge it or not, I think it's all toward, it's all in benefit of the people. So you are doing your part, and you're doing the role that was set up specifically for you. Now, just because you're not out there doing various other things doesn't mean you're not doing your part, because what you've actually put together, Vinny, is it's huge. It's huge on a scale that there is no one like you. Therefore, people don't get access to the quality information that you bring out. And you just bring out, you just have an ability to be able to bring it out of people. So, I mean, you are doing your part, Vinny, whether you know, choose to know it or not. I think you are anyway.
Yeah, well, there was somebody the other day, it's like I was talking about warrant needing donations to warrant and register my car, and somebody criticised me, and he called me a pussy because I wasn't going out and resisting the cops and making up my own licences and my own registrations and so on and so forth, and subjecting myself to being pulled over and getting locked in solitary confinement and getting tortured and so on and so forth. I'm a coward. Incidentally, the person who made this comment was using a Facebook account that didn't have his real name.
But that's always the case, right? And you know what? In all honesty, I would not recommend that anyone go around doing anything unless they've done their homework, unless they're well-versed in it. There's no point in copying and pasting a document, a lethal document, and you have no idea how to use it. There's absolutely no use. You are just looking for trouble, and you are going to get yourself into trouble. I mean, what we did it. Yeah, okay, people go, oh, yeah, but look, you got locked up. Yeah, okay, I got locked up, but I knew I was going to get locked up. We knew exactly what we had done. Not only that, before we got locked up, we had put all the systems in place to make sure that I was returned, to make sure that I was going to get out. Now, that's why they kidnapped me that day, because they knew that we had gone and taken all the laws, and we had put all the laws into an affidavit and submitted that affidavit that morning that I was supposed to appear in court. So they knew that I was going to walk scot-free because they knew they had nothing on me. All they wanted was just a guilty plea. Now, they needed the guilty plea so that they can trade on the market, they can trade on the stock market, because that is what it's all about. It's about getting a guilty plea, and then what they do is they go and apply for your printout. Now, this is another story that you and I, that I'm well versed in, that you and I should be having one day, Vinny. But the courts actually go and apply for your printout, right? And then they go and trade it on the stock markets, and they put it on the stock markets for 90 days in hope that you will respond. Okay. So this is the big scam that people need to wake up to. You are being traded. So every time they get a guilty plea or a non-guilty plea, or they do any business in their court, they are all getting paid. They are receiving a commission, and the commission comes from your printout, you know. And your printout is not your birth certificate. If you carry a birth certificate, you are holding your death certificate. You are acknowledging and saying, yes, I'm a stillborn, I'm dead, I'm the fictitious entity. And you don't even hold your allodial title. They hold your allodial title. You hold the warehouse receipt. So it means you've got access, you're allowed to look after the body, you're allowed to use it, but if you break any of the rules that come with using it, then you will be in serious trouble. And that's how they're, it all starts with the birth certificate. That's how they're able to do all this. So what we've done is we've given ours back. We've said, well, we're not that fictitious entity. So people need to learn to stop answering to the name in court, because you are not that name. You are not the name on the birth certificate. That is their puppy. That is their little creature that they created. And I mean, that's a whole new subject that we won't really go into, because it's something that needs to be taught over a period of, sessions in order for people to understand it fully. So because it's like being ripped out of the matrix all of a sudden. You sort of can't do that. You've got to rock that baby, you know.
It's like Yoda said to Luke Skywalker, "You must unlearn what you have learned."
Oh, I love it. You do a great impersonation.
I mean, just think about how many years it's taken you to be indoctrinated into believing all this BS. It's constant, you know, you're freaking bathing in it, you know, you sniff under your eye, man, that smells like BS, you know, your own crotch, man, that smells like BS too, man. I'm actually covered in BS from head to toe, and it's going to take me quite some time to scrub myself clean from all this brainwashing.
Our thoughts are actually banks, you know, and we've got to learn what they really are, the true identity of these outfits, because I mean we think they're a court, that they have all this authority, but they're really just a bank. They're a bank, they're a bench, and they're in the business of facilitating security interests, which when you're in that sort of business, that requires consent. So in order to have a firm, solid contract, both parties must consent. So, I mean, if you went in there and denied consent, then they don't have a contract with you. And one only needs to reassert themselves three times before the judge will either have to throw it out or get up and walk out. And if he walks out, then he's abandoned his post.
Yeah. Well, you know, I do think that there is a lot that can be done about this particular issue, but it's a team effort. You know, it's like in the battlefield. You have frontline soldiers who go out and take the fight to the enemy, and then you have your backline soldiers, the cooks, the nurses, the transport people, and so on and so forth, without whom you would not survive your first engagement. Those people who are backing you up, the propaganda team. I consider myself kind of a propaganda network of New Zealand, and meaning it's actually propaganda, right? Because like, think about this, ladies and gentlemen, when you're looking at this show, you will actually have a propaganda at the issues, as opposed to just hearing propaganda from the mainstream media. They're a bunch of scum. Don't freaking trust them. Don't trust the cops. Don't trust the courts, unless you want to be, you know, taken advantage of. Kerry Campbell, thank you very much. facebook.com/Kerry.Campbell. We'll see you again sometime.